Today on Next Level E-Commerce.
There's a lot of embarrassment in the middle class because I think everybody thinks that we're supposed to be doing better than we are. We always think other people are doing way better than us. For a lot of people, where the idea of having your finances exposed would be like literally worse than having your underwear drawer exposed.
You're listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Each week, we feature inspiring stories from entrepreneurs who have taken their business to the next level. They share successes and failures and what kept them going when they felt like giving up. And here's your host, Isaac Smith.
Money. What does it mean to you? Does thinking about it make you feel excited or ashamed or nothing at all? Your answer will determine how much you accumulate over the course of your life. So it's time we take a close look at this question. The devil's greatest trick was convincing the world he didn't exist. In a similar way, your brain's greatest trick was convincing you that your thoughts are your own. So when it comes to money, your beliefs and behaviors are largely automatic, based on what you saw and experienced as a kid. My guest today, Bree Sodano, is a financial planner who helps business owners make and keep more of their money. To do so, she spends a lot of her time helping her clients build a healthy relationship with money. And today, Bree's going to walk you through an exercise to find out how your money mindset was formed and how it impacts your current financial situation. You're going to hear all this and more in just a minute. If this is your first time listening, I know you're going to love this episode. But before you get sucked into it, take a minute to hit that subscribe button on your phone so you don't miss the next amazing story. And if you enjoy the podcast and you want to support it, here's what you can do. Please leave a review on whatever podcast app you use. That really does help us get the word out. I'll be reading reviews on the show more often, and I hope to read yours. So if you've been listening for a while and you haven't left a review yet, please take 7 seconds to hit that review button. And if you've already left a review, thank you. If you want to continue supporting the show, please share this episode with someone you know who would enjoy it. Thanks. Today, I'm joined once again by my partner, Jason. And if you're new to the show, or if you haven't heard the last several episodes, Jason and I are coming to you each episode, giving you a little update on what's going on in our business, in our lives, things that we're learning, things that we're seeing in the world of business in general, and giving you some quick updates and takeaways. And so it's another episode here. This is actually a beautiful Friday morning here in Portland, Oregon, where both of us live, which can be unusual this time of year. So I'm enjoying it at least. Jason is sitting on the beach, not really, just with his Zoom background. How are you, Jason?
Doing pretty good. And as you said, at least at the moment, it's pretty sunny. Well, that'll probably change in a little bit, but we'll take it while we got it.
Yeah. Before we get started, I wanted to read a review that we have here for the podcast. So ECB20 says, it gives a 5-star review and says, great show for e-commerce. Every episode dives deep into the space of e-commerce with a different angle every time. Very good production and really enjoyable. Thank you so much, ECB, whoever you are. I really do appreciate that and I'm glad that you're enjoying it. One other thing that I wanted to mention before we get into the topic today is we are doing a new weekly lunch and learn. We're doing this live on Facebook every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific, which of course is 3 p.m. Eastern, where we have talk about something that's important to you. And Jason and I are there to talk. It's a real live discussion. It's not really a presentation, although we have information about whatever topic it is. It's really a discussion, a time for questions and answers. So if you'd like to be in the discussion. We would love to have you. Just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/lunch, and that'll send you to the Facebook group. So love to see you there. Now, today we've got a topic that is something that we're dealing with, we're planning for in our business, and that is the idea of redundancy risk and staff risk. So Jason, do you want to describe what this is and why it's important?
Yeah, so it's, you know, every business has a certain level of risk of execution and all these various risks that we go through as we manage and operate our businesses. And for us as a productized service, we have staff needs to be able to deliver products to our services to our customers and things. And so if for some reason that one of us is not available, staff or even myself or Isaac as founders, what is our process going to be? How are we going to manage those situations? And so it's not so much as coming up with a policy, it's just having at least some type of idea of how you're going to approach these different things of risk that we're going to encounter, all of us are going to encounter as we go through our business. And in our case, it's primarily managing for the human side of things, because that's where the most likely of those situations is going to present itself as we operate our business and things.
Yeah. So this came up because, you know, everybody, you know, and when you're growing a business, you're growing your staff. Sometimes people get sick. Then you start to think about, well, what happens if something worse happens? Or what if one of our staff has a kid, you know, and they want to take months off? So how are we going to handle these things as they arrive? And so for you, of course, we provide a service. For you as an e-commerce business, you know, I imagine you have people doing customer service or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. What happens if that person goes into the hospital for a few weeks or something, you know? So it's not that we have all of the answers, but I think it's a useful thought exercise. And so we've actually, Jason and I had our Friday morning meeting just a few minutes ago. And this is one of the things that we were talking about. So we thought it would be useful to give you guys an inside view of how we're approaching topics like the issues like this. So Jason, you want to describe maybe a couple of the things that we've sort of discussed as ways of handling this?
Yeah. So one way which we already practice that's going to be a risk reducer in that sense is we're very strong in our systems, utilizing product delivery or service delivery, depending on how you're interpreting it, internal management, you know, lots of our things are documented, our processes and things. And so to a greater degree than some companies, we've got less risk when we onboard and hire new people to plug them in quicker and be able to deliver in quicker than most of it. Now, that's still a risk. There's still going to be an onboarding period and things that we'd have to manage through. But so that's one way to reduce risk. And the second is having a ready pool of people that you can hire for your different positions. And in our case, it's going to be accounting and bookkeeping experienced people to bring into the organization if for whatever reason that we needed to, either we've got people, again, like you were mentioning, sick or going to be away for a while, or even more if we all of a sudden came across, you know, four or five clients in a week, how quickly would we be able to hire to be able to match that demand? Because that would put a big, you know, time crunch on our existing staff and things. So having that, having an available pool of people that understand who we are, what we do, how we approach business, that we're, for example, we only support zero. So QuickBooks experience may be useful to some degree, but it's still not as relevant to what we do to those who have zero experience of things. So having a qualified applicant pool that would likely be interested in working with us is, I think, a good thing to nurture and develop, not just your customers. In our case, it'd be something, because we're a productized service, having that human resource talent pool available as well.
Yeah. And I want to add to that. This is actually a really exciting thing, and it builds a lot on the things that I'm always talking about. So If you're listening, you know that I'm really huge into team building and systems. And if you've heard me talk at all about hiring great people and building a great team, you know that I strongly believe in selling your opportunity. And so when you start to make that mindset shift into selling your opportunity to potential people who you want to work with or hire, then you start to now see that, oh, actually, this is quite similar to our marketing process for our customers, for the things that we want to sell to them, right? So what you end up doing is you end up building out a funnel or thinking, conceptualizing this as a funnel. And so one of the things that we're talking about doing is that's going to be really critical to our growth. And I would suggest your growth as well, no matter what business you're in, is getting great people in to run and grow your business. And so when Jason's talking about an applicant pool, developing a network of people who we know are doing the interested in the kinds of things that we're doing and doing similar work. So for example, we provide bookkeeping services. So of course, people who are online bookkeepers and accountants are our ideal target market, right? If we're talking marketing. So for you, if you're in e-commerce and maybe you're thinking, well, gee, how could I apply this? Well, it might just be people who are really interested in business, right? So if you think like, okay, I'm going to be hiring a lot in the Philippines or Pakistan or wherever it is, you know, developing those relationships. And if you already have a team or a small team or even just one, chances are pretty good that they know other people in that kind of a space. And so that's exactly what we're starting to do. Is the manager that we hired a few months ago, Tracy, who's amazing. She has a lot of contacts. In fact, she's in these communities where, just like you, if you're in entrepreneur communities, these people are in their own communities as well. And so if you can now start to go into those communities and add value, for example, what we've just decided to do is provide training to people who want to be e-commerce bookkeepers so that, you know, by the time we're ready to hire our next person, we already have people who are interested in what we're doing. Plus, we've trained them, so we know that they know how to do the work that we're doing. So, I mean, that's kind of down the rabbit hole a little bit, I think, for this discussion. But if you can start thinking about ways of doing that in your business, maybe, you know, I've always said that you want to find people who are really excited and on fire to move up the ladder, right? You don't want to hire just a customer service person who's just interested in customer service, although that wouldn't be terrible. What you really want is someone who wants to be CEO one day. So if you can get a pool of people in a community, maybe on Facebook, of people like that, but who are just starting, then you can start to build those relationships. And you know, it might sound like a lot for you to do as the business owner, but like I said, if you have existing staff who are interested in building community that way, that's a great place to start. Awesome. Anything else that we need to hit on that topic, Jason, before we head out?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well. Obviously we could dive into it, but that might be time for a discussion for our lunch and learn and stuff.
So yeah.
Maybe tune in there in the coming weeks and we might dive into a little bit more there.
Yeah. If you're interested in this topic, please let me know, reach out or let either of us know. And like Jason said, we're going to be talking about things like this in the Lunch and Learns in e-commerce lunch. That's every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. is Eastern. I think that's pretty early in the morning in Australia, but I think it's somewhere around 8 a.m. or something, 8, 9 a.m. So if you should be able to make it if you make it a priority. All right. Thanks, Jason. We'll see you next week. And for listeners, we're going to get into our episode now. And here we go. You can find links to everything we discuss in our show notes at nextlevelecommerce.co/79. My guest today Bree Sedano is the founder of Sheep to Shark, which is a financial planning company, which, like I said earlier, helps business owners make more money and keep the money that they make. This episode is going to be a little bit different than most. You may know that I hosted an event in the middle of January to help business owners plan for the best year ever called This Is Your Year. And this conversation with Bree was recorded live at the event. It was so powerful that I wanted you on the podcast to hear it. She's going to take you through a guided exercise to decode your money mindset. And she's going to ask you to write some things down. So if you're able to do so, go ahead and find a quiet place with a table and pen and paper and take some notes while you listen. In about the last third of the conversation, we took questions from the audience, and I'm leaving them in because I think a lot of you will be able to relate, and they'll give you some different perspectives to think about your situation. Also, if you would like to be involved in conversations like this, of course, this is the kind of thing that we're doing with our Lunch and Learn called E-Commerce Lunch. Again, that's happening every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 Eastern. So now let's get into it. Please welcome Bree Sedano.
I worked in the nonprofit sector for like a decade, and then I started getting into finance. And what I realized was clients were coming to see me asking for like a plan. They're like, Bree, I need a better plan. I need a plan. Tell me what to do. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, they're like, I told them what to do. And it was the same dry, brittle, boring advice that they'd heard before. Like, well, pack a lunch. Pack a lunch, friend. Then you can put money in these other places. And so what I started to realize was that the plan, like the having of the plan is not, like, that's not really where the results are. I started to really look at like, all right, well, what actually drives these decisions? Because my client, these are smart, amazing people who are like, you know, kicking ass in life, taking names, like doing their work, running the kids' soccer team, having a clean house and organic fish in the fridge. Like, these are people who are amazing. And I was like, why can't you just like make a lunch? And the thing is it's not really about the plan. So I started really working with my clients on habit work. And then I found habit work is definitely better. And then we started getting into money mindset work. And that's really where like the amazing sauce started to like be in their lives. So your money belief system is basically like the formation of kind of like your base level. So when a human is born, like when you have like a little baby, they're basically just a subconscious brain, right? The prefrontal cortex, that part of your brain that can go into the future, that can go into the past, that goes to school, that can read a spreadsheet, that reminds you to go to the dentist every 6 months. That part of your brain doesn't start to come online until you're like 7 or 8. So like the entire time that you are born to 8 years old, you're basically learning how to be a program, like you're being programmed how to be a human in the world that you live in by the people that you love or that love you, or in some circumstances, the people that don't, whatever. Like, so not everybody had the easiest upbringing, right? And I see that. And so all of these things start to play into who we think we are, like, especially around money, because money ends up, we end up seeing a lot of worthiness issues or worthiness around money. So it's, you'll see it more in your ability to have money, you know, in your ability to spend big money on yourself. A lot of my clients have to justify purchases. Things, yeah. You know, I have to justify this to myself or to my spouse. It's funny. Sometimes I'll still catch myself justifying purchases to my husband who like 100% doesn't care. He'll be like, okay, all right. Yeah. You bought the great chocolate, Brie. Yes.
I so relate to this.
It's funny. Sometimes I still catch myself doing it. And so your money belief system is that process of how this thing came to be. And the reason that it's so important is to look at it is because a lot of times we got programming that when you look at, you're like, oh, that explains a lot. And that should stop. We do not need to use money like our dad did, basically. Like, we don't, there's other ways to do it. But when you, until you realize that this is why you do things, a lot of times it just keeps happening. And when you try to adjust your behavior with willpower, which is like the conscious override of your subconscious brain, that only works like one time a day for like 2 minutes. For like 2 weeks, you can use willpower to actually accomplish something. And then after that, it doesn't work. It's why I've been on a zillion diets, but I'm still a little fat. It's because like I didn't do the other work. You know what I mean? Like the manual override of the desire doesn't actually work in the long term, right? And it happens with money all the time. So if you are like, if you're in your sheets right now, we're going to talk a little bit about like how that's formed and kind of what to think about. And if you're not in your sheets, you can just listen along, I guess. So there's four different like really places that your money belief system kind of comes into your senses, comes into your ears, eyes, your experience. So the first thing that's going to be like, if you can imagine like the Target logo with like four circles, the one that's going to be closest to you, the one that's going to make the most difference is the things that you personally experienced. And a lot of times we'll have like little childhood stories of like the time we asked for a gummy bear 65 times in one trip. And then our mom like smacked us and told us, no, we're not getting the gummy bears and not to ask again. And if we asked again, we're going to be in deep trouble. And she was definitely mad at us, right?
Like, can I interrupt here? You said this either in the presentation for the workshop, or I heard you on George's podcast and you say that. And I got a sting because like, oh no, am I training my daughter in the store?
Wrong. Oh God. Oh yeah. I don't know
that we do it harshly like mindset. That. Oh no. What am I doing to her? Anyway, please do continue.
So then like, all right, so let's just say this happens. And I feel like as a parent, my kids have totally annoyed the ever loving crap out of me being like, can we have a pony and a taco? And like, where do you get a penguin? Can we get a, and I'm like, oh, you want a penguin? Like, what are you even talking about? But these kids, they're like, no, you're not getting a penguin. You're never going to have a penguin. Like, stop asking me for a penguin. Like, I cannot provide you a penguin. You need to go to Antarctica if you want a penguin. Like, I can't be in charge of these things. And when we're a kid, we don't care. We just have our desires. And they're so pure and they're so clean. And then the people who are asking to provide our ridiculous desires, like, beat it out of us because you cannot have a penguin in your parents' house. You need to have your own house to have a penguin is basically what it comes down to. Even though this is literally the most ridiculous example. So anyways, so your mom gives you a little smack and she's like, don't ask, never again. Like, do not embarrass me in the store, right? And like, then you feel like you're bad. And so listen, that story happens and you could make that story mean gummy bears are the worst. I'm never asking for gummy bears again. They get me in trouble. You could make that story mean I'm the worst. I can't ever ask for anything. You can make that story mean it doesn't even matter. It never matters. I never get what I want anyways. This is so stupid. You can make it story mean that your mom is a biatch and she's the worst. Or, I mean, you can look at it with like, now, like I'm sure that we're talking to adults. We've all been that mom who's had a long day and that kid was just so persistent and we just lost it a little bit at the checkout line. Right. And so we make that story mean something, but when it's a personal experience, it gets a little anchored in with like the emotion. Cause like you get that little smack and it's, you know, you're the little kid and you're like, it stings your, you know, your hand or it stings your heart and your feelings are hurt. So that's the first place is like these personal stories, right? We start to have these personal experiences, you know, and this is not all just childhood. Personal experiences go all the way up to like yesterday. So like the time, you know, your boss told you would never amount to much, or the time that your ex-husband told you were so bad at money, or the, like there's these things that we can kind of internalize. So then the second place that we really pick up a lot, like the lion's share of our money mindset, is through those family interactions, because you saw your life and money interacts in a lot of different reasons. So, you know, the way that your parents earned money, the way they spent money, the way they invested, the way they saved or didn't save, how safe you felt in your house around the finances, what they taught you around giving and receiving. A lot of times too, it's like a sneaky little backdoor to finding your money mindset is to start to really like think about people who have money, like rich people, wealthy people, people who don't have money, and start to check your judgments around it, because typically that's a good way to kind of like get some extra juicy material if you're having trouble with the activities. You're like, well, let's just write down all the things that we think about Jeff Bezos. This is an entrepreneurial crowd, so we probably love Jeff Bezos. But, you know, in the W-2 world, people have a lot of things to say about Jeff Bezos. So then the third place is going to be like, it's kind of culture at large, the third and the fourth place. So most of us had like a school community or church community or neighborhood. And that's generally where you're going to get a lot of the comparisons, like a lot of the things that you kind of came up with about yourself, like, cause money's relative. So when you're just at home, it doesn't really mean anything. You either got the gummy bears, you didn't get the gummy bears. But when you start to compare yourself to the kids at school who got the gummy bears, but you didn't get the gummy bears, that's where we start to make these comparisons. Or like, they have different kinds of shoes, or they go to Disney World. How come we don't go to Disney World? Or they don't go to Disney World and we get to go to Disney World. But how come can we take them to Disney World? Right. And then the last place is just like culture, like big culture, like the culture on the radio that you see on TV, you know, the big, like the stuff that you hear. And all of those things kind of come into your brain, and they all play a different role. And so what ends up happening a lot of times is sometimes we'll get like conflicting ideas. Like you'll hear, you just put your mind to it. Believe in yourself. You can do whatever you want. And then here you are, like got smacked with the gummy bear story, and you're like, well, that doesn't matter. I can't get what I want anyways. So sometimes we'll have these really conflicting stories. Mm-hmm. So that's like where the stories come from. And then the ways that they actually really get into your being is what you heard. So did you hear your parents fighting about money? Did they tell you money didn't grow on trees? You know, and I'll tell you, a lot of people who grew up in the middle class, when they do this activity, they don't have anything for what they heard. So if that happens for you, it's pretty common, because a lot of times, go ahead. Did you have something?
Oh yeah. I was, you in your exercises, you had all of these things that you write down what you have to say about X, about Y, about rich people, about poor people. And exactly that. Some things I had a lot to say, and others are like, rich people are rich.
Done. Yeah. You're like, yeah.
It's anyway, probably the stuff
that comes up. It's like, rich people are bad at driving. It was like, like I had one client who was like, because it always, like their dad would always be mad at the guy in the Mercedes. Like, oh, that guy in the Mercedes was such a bad driver. And there's, oh, he's got a Mercedes, so he thinks he could do whatever he wants on the road. It was like that sort of, like, it's funny stuff. So now if you're rich, you also have to be a bad driver, you know, which is not true. It's not true. Your ability to drive is not related to your bank accounts. So anyways, so just as you get into these activities, so it's going to be what you heard. Like if you can remember the conversations, if you can remember what they taught you, then it's going to be what you saw them do, like their actual modeling. This is generally where most people have the biggest stuff, like the biggest areas to fill out on their things. And then you want to kind of separate your own personal experiences, because those tend to be a little stickier. And again, when you're thinking like money mindset, like your money belief system, for most of it, you want to try to think about like kind of early life memories, but anything that you would consider to be like really specific and personal to your story, time doesn't really matter, because that rewiring happens very differently, like inside your noggin. So if you're following along and you haven't watched the presentation, what you want to do is grab a few sheets of paper and you want to like split them into three. So you write like heard, saw, and like personally experienced, you know, like you could like fold it, you know, like we did in grade school. And you want to go through the different facets of money, right? Because money, like money blocks, aren't just on like cash, you know, cash paper in general. You know, they'll be around earning. Like earning is one of the big ones. You know, how much you can earn, how hard do you have to work? Do you get sick if you earn? Do you have to lose your spirituality if you earn? Are you evil if you earn? Like there's all these, earning is one of the things where there's a lot more conflicting beliefs that we'll have. And it will be, a lot of times they're either or. So I'll tell you one of my big breakthroughs. So when I started in finance, I was way undercharging. Literally, people would get to my office. We would do their work. They'd take out their checkbook and I'd be like, no, please don't pay me. Please not for my expertise and my time. I couldn't ever take your money for that. And so I was hardly making any money, because I was not taking, like, they'd be like, they'd have their checkbook out. They'd be like, no, no, please. It was free. It was free. Because I had this belief that if I was helping people, it was from the goodness of my heart. And if I was working, I could work and that was good and I could get paid for work, but I could not, like, they were mutually exclusive. Like, if I was helping people, it was for free. If I was working, I was not helping people. And I have a big heart, so I wanted to help everybody. And then because I had that belief, then the charging felt guilty. Like, I was doing something wrong. Like, you know, I had a lot of emotional resistance around it because it didn't match my belief system. So when I would go to charge it, it didn't match. And then I would feel so bad about it. I couldn't even tolerate it. So I wouldn't do it.
You're speaking to me right now.
Yeah. So literally what I found was, like, it was a childhood story. Like, I went to my next door neighbor's house. I think I was 5 or 6. She was this little old lady. I was just going to hang out with her. You're okay, honey. Go ahead. And she asked me to take out her garbage, and I did. And she gave me a dollar bill and a handful of coins. And then I went and I, like, showed my mom. And my mom was mortified. She was like, you made the woman pay you to take out her garbage? Like, why wouldn't you just do that? And she was, like, she was mad about it and it mortified. Mm. Horribly embarrassed. And, like, as a parent, you're like, oh, all right, I kind of get it. But, you know, I was 5 or 6 and I was just excited to have the dollar. And I wasn't, like, hustling the old woman. She asked me to do the thing. I did the thing. She gave me the coins. I was like, yes. It was a very mutually beneficial exchange. It was good for both of us. So my mom made me go return the money.
Oh.
I felt so bad. I was a bad girl. I felt so 75 shades of bad about this. And so then I made that story mean I could help people and I could work and get paid, and it was okay to work and get paid. But woof, the two were not to be mixed. They were not to be entangled. And what I found that belief and I was like, oh boy, got it. Within a year, my income went from like $2,000 to $3,000 a month selling securities to $25,000 a month in my own business. Like, it was wild. When I decided that I could help people and get paid, and actually the more people pay, like, cause I do coaching. So the more people pay, the more they show up, the better results that they get. It happens. Like, I have some programs that I used to offer at lower prices that I found that I don't get enough follow through from the clients if I don't charge enough, you know, like. And so once that belief changed, like, my earning capacity was so much greater. So you want to think about your earning. Then you want to think about, like, spending. Like, do you have to need something to be able to buy it? It's like the cutest little limiting belief that there is. Mm. And a lot of people have that belief. Because again, when you're a kid, like, you're expecting your parents to provide for your needs. But they were like, listen, kid, you're going to get your basic needs met. Maybe a few things that you want. Like, I can't be getting you a penguin, you know, like, you're not getting a taco today. Like, shut up. Like, you can't have a taco. So the, you know, spending is another thing. So a lot of, like, you know, a lot of clients spend a lot of money in very small increments. Like, they'll be comfortable to spend, you know, $50 100 times, but the idea of spending $5,000, like, freaks them out. So that's another area where you really want to see, like, did you, like, there's even some people who almost think, like, spending money is like a scam. Like, if you had to pay for something, it was clearly a scam. You know, like, so you want to think about spending money, and then also kind of think about expenses, because a lot of people, like, will increase their expenses to match their income no matter how much money they make. They'll always feel their cash flow is always tight. So you want to be thinking, what did you hear? What did you see? You know, what have you experienced around your spending? The same thing for saving. Like,
as we're talking, for you watching, how about we go through this exercise? Let's get out a piece of paper, a pen, or bring up the notes on your computer or device or whatever, and just jot down as we're talking, what are some of these experiences? What are some of the things that you heard about? We've talked about income. What did your parents say, or what did you see about their income? And same thing with expenses. So do continue. And then later on, we'll open it up for questions and comments. And anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yes. All right. I was getting excited. I was getting carried away. Yeah. So you want to think about too, like, so all these different facets of money, this, you know, this activity, you want to think, and if we, like, we talk about earning, spending, savings, debt, investing, giving, receiving, rich people, poor people, you know, but if there's something else that's really like tangled up for you where you're like, you know, it's taxes, you know, or something like that, you know, feel free to adjust the activity. So somebody asks, miss what we're supposed to put in four columns? So it's three columns. And so what you want to do is what you heard, what you saw, and what you experienced. And then you may want to just grab, like, you know, in the corner of your paper, just write earning, spending, saving, debt, investing, giving, receiving, rich people, poor people. Because those are...
I was just going to say, you know, this is a larger exercise that you can go through later on, but as we're doing this live, you know, we can simplify it. And so that you can have time to ask your questions and leave your comments. So yes, sorry.
So a lot of time, I guess really where we're going with this is a lot of times the blocks that we have are so very specific to one area, you know, and it'll be like, we get to one, you know, sometimes we get to like stuck at a, like a earnings level in our business, you know, or we get, you know, stuck around spending. We're like, wow, it's so weird. I like can't, you know, I can't pull the trigger to buy, you know, something really big, or I can't justify these things to myself. So that's it. So that, like, debt is another area that's got a lot of weight to it. People generally don't love having debt. That's one of the main reasons people hire me, actually, is around debt. And so a lot of times we only saw our parents spending on credit cards, or we had to wait until, you know, the billing cycle was renewed to buy stuff, or, you know, they cursed the Capital One, you know, like interest was the worst or whatever, you know, different things like that. So then you want to think about investing. Did you hear anything about investing? Did you see them ever do investing, talk about investing, open up the statements? You know, do you have any experience investing? Or, that's a good one. Giving and receiving is interesting, because generally we think about like gifts or whatever else, but it's even like, think about compliments, like how good are you at receiving, being able to receive is something that I actually find that a lot of clients have a lot of jam ups, even like a compliment. A lot of my clients are women too. So to say, wow, Isaac, you look amazing in that shirt today. Really great shirt. You know, some people can't accept
that
compliment.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes. Jack Leo.
Thank
yeah.
you, Bree.
Like, bringing it back. You know, you ever give someone a compliment and they're like, no, don't say nice things to me. I don't like that. Or, oh, I got it for $4 at Macy's. And you're like, okay. Or basically they'll tell you how stupid you are for even thinking that their shirt is great. You're like, this old thing? No, this thing's 20 years old. What's wrong with you? And you're like, all right, never mind. Never saying anything nice to you again. So think about that around like compliments, around gifts, even like in your sexual life. Like a lot of times, like that's where you'll start to see jam ups. And there's a lot of correlation in giving and receiving anything to your relationship with money. Like if you can't receive a compliment, chances are really big money is going to be hard for you. So that's an area too where people tend to get a little like, they're like, oh, I really love to give gifts, but I really hate to get them. Like that's worth really looking at. Then you want to think about rich people and poor people, because really, like, that's generally our best work is going to come in the judgment of others, which is kind of terrible to say, but it's absolutely true. So you'll find that if you're judging people for what they bought or what they didn't buy, when you're in business, you almost even want to think about other things like how much time somebody took off, or whether or not they work as hard as you do. That's some of the stuff too we judge people for. As entrepreneurs, one of the things is like our employees, like sometimes we'll have some judgments there, especially if you're in the camp that pays your employees, but you don't get paid. That's the thing. When you're not taking a paycheck, but you're paying your people. Actually, that's a that is bad news. If that's the case, you got to put yourself on the payroll, because it will end up causing so much judgment and so much resentment that you could actually end up losing your team over it. Not to mention that you totally deserve to be paid if you own the business, and it's, you know, that sort of thing. So that's basically the entire activity. And so once you like dig up these ideas, the thing that you want to start to do is connect the dots. Like, you want to start to be like, oh, I totally see my parents did these terrible things with money. And then you can like look, because now it's later in their lives, and you're like, and that actually didn't work out for them. So I'm going to start to do this different. Like, so for me, I found, so my dad raised us, and he sold insurance when we were kids. And there was a lot of feast or famine. Like, he would get paid, and he'd go to Costco and fill the fridge. And I'm sure he'd get caught up on whatever he was behind on. And he'd spend all the money that he just made in like 22 minutes, and then money would be tight again. And I realized, like, in the beginning part of my practice, like, I was doing the same thing. And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, well, I don't want Bob's patterns. Like, this, that was exhausting. And it was, as a kid, it made me feel like unsafe in a lot of ways. And I was like, all right, well, let's just do things different. Well, you know, and once you see it, you have the power to really move what it is you want to move. So, I mean, that's basically the activity. So I'd be thrilled to hear any ahas. Like, I talked the entire time, so you didn't probably get any really actually quiet time to dig into your own mind.
Why don't we give people a minute or so? And of course, we can still chat a little bit, but maybe what's one area, if they're just going to take a few minutes, what are a couple of big ones to jot down?
Earnings and debt, probably. Earnings and even savings. Earnings, savings, and debt would be the big ones. Like, how much money can you tolerate in your bank account before you manifest emergencies is a question to ask yourself.
Okay. So if you're here with us, so get a piece of paper out or a notes app or something and write down what you saw, what you heard, what you experienced around Jack, you made me laugh. Mid-sentence, I'm watching the comments. What did Bree say about sexual compliments? I didn't
catch. Well, it wasn't sexual compliments. It was sexual experiences in the giving and the receiving. So some people, that's like another area where there's maybe extra giving, no receiving, or no receiving. You know, like, you want to kind of see, is it fair and equitable to all parties?
Sorry, that comment caught me mid-sentence.
But it's like a giving and receiving type thing. And it could be anything where you're going to give and receive.
So, yes, we're talking. So take a few minutes and write down what you heard, what you saw, what you experienced, either or around income, savings, and debt, right? We'll give you a few minutes. And then as you're writing this stuff, put a few things in the comments, and we'll talk about these things. If you have any questions, this is a good time to ask about this stuff. I see we've got another.
I heard compliments
too. And then it was glossed over.
It's totally possible.
Here we've got a comment from Candace. She says, I struggled to fill out the debt and investing pages because my parents never really talked about them growing up. I like what you said about thinking about giving and receiving outside of money as well. Never thought about it that way before.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Candace, it's really, really common, especially. So what I find working with people is that money ends up being a very embarrassing topic for most people. And it's very much especially the middle class, because where one, it's like a rude topic of conversation, so we're not really supposed to talk about it. So since parents generally go with that, like, a lot of kids, if you'd asked your parents, how much money do you make? They would have been like, well, don't worry about it. Like, why are you asking me that? Because it's a rude question, or it's a taboo question. So it can be received as like, why are you asking me this really rude and invasive question? And there's a lot of embarrassment in the middle class, because I think everybody thinks that we're supposed to be doing better than we are. We always think other people are doing way better than us. And so it tends to really be like kind of embarrassing. And almost like a shameful topic for a lot of people, where the idea of having your finances exposed would be like literally worse than having your underwear drawer exposed. Like it, getting into people's transit. So I work with clients and we do meetings on Zoom, so I can see their visceral reactions as I'm in their transactions with them. Now, these are people who've hired me, paid me a lot of money to be so nosy in their transactions with them. You know, and we're helping. Like, I'm certainly never judging my clients, but you can still, like, it's such an, like, it feels super intimate, even though it's just, like, just transactions. It's just numbers on paper. It's not really reflective of like you as a person or anything like that. It's just kind of where you are with your money. And yeah. So anyways, you're in great company, Candace, because a lot of people never heard about these things.
Yeah. I want to change that. Like, money is something, if nobody talks about it, how can we learn how best to handle it?
Yeah. No, I go live, I talk about it. What's funny is because, like, actually, Elliot, who was on yesterday, is actually my hypnotherapist. And, like, literally, I have an appointment with him tomorrow to work around, like, some of the embarrassment around this. Because, like, as a money coach, I should be a model for this. But still, sometimes, even for myself, I'm like, I don't. Am I going to say I did 50 grand this month? I don't know. It feels embarrassing, even though like this part of my brain is like, no, it's not embarrassing. And two, this is what you do. Part of your job is to model this. You know, it's important. It's important work to even just bring it up and to broach the topic. Cause like, if we don't talk about, like, part of the reason why the middle class is shrinking, like, there's a lot of outside factors, but part of it is because we don't learn from each other's mistakes or each other's successes. Like, if I was to make a cheesecake and it was to come out a little off, and you were to know exactly why, you're like, oh, I'm so good at making cheesecake, you know what you need to do? You need a water bath. That's going to solve that problem. You would just be like, oh, I've done that before. I know exactly. Yeah, you just put a little water in the bottom of the pan and everything's good from there. But in money, you're like, hey girl, I'm watching you do all these things, and then you say you don't have money for vacation, but like you totally do because you buy snacks 500 times a week at the restaurant down in the office. And you know, but that sounds mean and judgy and awful. And like your advice would be unsolicited, where if you just said that about my cheesecake, I'd be like, oh, thanks. Water bath, no crack in the top. You know, around money, it's like, why is she judging me? Or should I even say that? You know, like we don't really do that for each other.
Yeah. Somebody here says, such an interesting dichotomy, talking about the intimacy of transactions and what they mean or trigger within each of us.
Yeah. It totally is, and it really is intensely intimate. It really is. Now that I've done it, yeah, with a lot of clients, it's definitely an interesting thing.
Question here: is this an American thing or more of a female thing? I'm not sure what the question is regarding. Maybe if you could clarify. Nate Smith, this is my cousin, folks. Oh. Hey, Nate, great to see you.
Is that a dolphin in the profile picture? Is the dolphin giving him a little smooch on the face?
Yes. Love it. Nate, good to see you, man. I'm so glad you're here. I noticed I have a lot of fear of taking investment risks. How do you recommend putting the ball in motion?
So the thing about investing is that to be good at investing, no matter what aspect of investing you're doing, whether or not you're investing in your business, whether or not you're investing in the stock market, real estate, investment always requires a skill set. And the mainstream, like the beliefs that we have are like, you know, you go and you get a job and you work and you put money in your 401k. And a lot of those 401ks are mutual funds. So they're not really managed by anybody that you're, so you're really hands off in regards to picking your own investments. And that can feel really out of control because you don't even get to pick from all the mutual funds. And a lot of people don't really understand the depth of how mutual funds work or what you pay for these things. And so it feels really very much like you're putting all of your trust for all of your retirement in this thing that you maybe don't all the way understand, and you don't necessarily have a lot of control over it. And so the fact that that feels terrible for a lot of people actually kind of makes sense. So chances are you probably want to increase your competency in that area of whatever it is you want to do. So like if you are going to invest in like the real estate market, for example, you probably want to go to some real estate seminars. You want to read a couple books. You want to start to understand the lingo, the way the money works, and how you want to start to see other people doing it. So sometimes we need a model in these things, like a model, like we need to know somebody who's doing it and see what's going on and see what works for them. If it was the stock market, again, like there's courses, there's classwork, but once you start to understand and you start to feel good in that competency, then the confidence can kind of come, because then you're like, oh, I went to talk to my financial advisor and we had a great conversation because I knew all the words. You know, the stock market's got a ton of lingo, and it can be like, that can also feel embarrassing if you're like, well, what does qualified money mean? You know, you're like, you know, then
yeah.
Like it can really not feel so good. So I would say to first work on your like competence. And then if that doesn't work, then you probably like want to start to work on your attachment to the money. But I would say for most people, it's really a competence issue first. They don't really know what it takes. They don't really have it together to feel good about it.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and I've got a question for you. Have you been putting your bookkeeping off? You know you need to do it. And sometimes you have the energy to get all caught up, but then you don't keep up with it. Each month that goes by, you get further and further behind. Or, just as annoyingly, maybe you have someone who gives you reports, but you don't understand them. What's the point of that? Deep down, you wonder, don't you? Well, here's the good news. You can easily take that load off your shoulders. This episode of Next Level E-Commerce is brought to you by Summit E-Commerce Advisors. That's my company. We have a done-for-you bookkeeping service that will take all that work off your plate and give you peace of mind. We make sure your books are up to date, accurate, and we help you understand what your reports mean. If you need help with this, and you know you do, just schedule a free call with me. There's no pressure. We'll just talk and see if this is right for you. Just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books and schedule a call with me. Again, that's nextlevelecommerce.co/books. I look forward to making your business a lot simpler. And now, back to the show. Yeah, I want to add to that. And then we got a few more comments here. Yes, before I really started my entrepreneurial journey, a book that I read that I think a lot of us have read, and if you haven't read it, I strongly recommend, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I read it for a second time last year after I sold my business. And I just was... It kind of floored me how much he repeated over and over, your job is to increase your financial literacy. That is the most important thing you can do. And so as I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing, and you know, like starting new businesses or investing or whatever, that hit me really hard. Like, wait a minute, I don't know anything about investing. And so, yeah, I think exactly like you said, in just starting to understand, increasing your competency and knowing what people are talking about, and then trying a little bit here and there. I think that's a good place to start. If you're going to go like, you know, all in, it's going to be tough, I think, with anything, whether that's investing or whether it's starting a business, or if you don't know anything about Facebook ads and you're going to start an agency, that's tough, right?
Yeah. So even in your business too, it requires investment always requires the skills to match. So if you want money to work for you, you need the skills to be able to operate that machine that you're making, whether or not it's a stock market machine, a real estate machine, or a Facebook ads agency machine, dry cleaning, like building or whatever, like whatever it is. And so that's really like, people talk about passive income, and it, I actually don't see very much evidence of that being true. Like, so I sell digital courses as part of my business, and people are like, oh, that's so great. You have passive income. And I'm like, what? Passive? No, I've invested like probably $100,000. I have a marketing team. We have Facebook ads. We're doing customer service. Like it's not passive income. Like I might be sleeping when the sale came in, which does happen and is kind of cool when you wake up and you're like,
that's awesome.
I made like $1,600 while I was napping. How great. But like, it's not passive income. Like it drives me nuts. People are like, oh, I want courses because I want passive income. And I'm like, that's cute. That's not true. I totally bought that though. That's why I have courses. I was like, I'm going to get some passive income.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, same thing. Like people who do real estate. Oh, it is a dolphin. Yes.
Nate says it is a dolphin.
Yeah. People who do real estate full time, like are working on it. Like they're doing stuff. And if you have a property manager, you have to manage the property manager, which means that you need to know what they're doing as well as they know what they're doing to know that everything makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, like if you're getting bills that are silly or, you know, if there's something of that nature, you have to know what you're doing to be able to be like, oh, it looks like there's a problem here. You know what I mean?
Got some more comments I want to get to. We got a few comments. Thanks for the question, Nate.
Yes.
Sharon says, so following back up on is this an American thing or more of a female thing? There's a follow-up comments here. Guys talk about money a lot more. About how much money they make.
A lot of times men are, in my experience, and we're not talking about all men, but the clients who come to see me, I work pretty frequently with couples, and the men are kind of more embarrassed about it generally because, like on a subconscious level, men are generally want to like provide and protect and have their women happy, right? If they're in that kind of relationship. So provide, protect, and please. And so when it comes to money, a lot of times, you know, if there's a problem in money, it's basically like, so let's just say we're married and we got a thing going. I have to kick you in the nuts twice to get you on board with something. I have to say, well, you're not providing properly, there's not enough money, there's a problem here, and I'm not happy about it. So now you're like, I'm not a good provider, she's not happy, and then we're gonna go see this lady who's gonna look at our transactions and tell me to stop going to Cabela's. Like, I'm not into that. So I actually see that. I actually don't think money, there are some issues that are a little bit more specific to women that generally come more around the earning than they do the management. But I find that the problems are kind of really not gender related. There's a lot of men who undercharge. That's not a gender thing. It's really just, yeah. So I don't know. I hope I answered the question.
And I think so.
In the American thing, I don't think I have enough context to address actually.
So guys, we have a few minutes left with Bree. What are some of the things you wrote down? Do you want to share with us and maybe we can have a quick chat? What are some of the things that you heard growing up around money? In fact, I told you I wrote 2.5 pages. I'll share some of mine. Money is hard to get for sure. Actually, what I've recently realized is in my family, my dad we talked quite a lot about my dad's decision to choose his family over, you know, a career that might be high paying and that might take him from us more. And so we always thought we always appreciated that very much. I did. Of course, I can't speak for my sister, but this is how we talked. And my mom appreciated that because, you know, everybody knows a family whose dad is off at work, you know, and he's got important things to do. But we were always more important. And I always thought that was wonderful. Only in the last few years did I realize that I've taken that on myself and I've taken it to mean that it's either family or money, that you cannot have both. And I think for me, that's a personal struggle of like, wait a minute, I'm not my parents. And I'm not saying that I'm not judging their decisions or anything, but I've taken that to mean something that is not true. And that's kind of hard for me to get out from under, actually.
Yeah, that's a thing, especially when there's so many emotions attached to it, like the love and appreciation for it. And I mean, I love your dad. It sounds like he's amazing.
He is amazing.
Yeah, no, I know. You said that. And I was like, I love him too. I totally get it. And I actually don't know his dad, but I'm sure he's lovely. Yeah. And so that's some of the stuff too. And sometimes too, our parents, they didn't have the internet. Like they didn't have the world that we have access to. The world is just 100, like it's such a different world. And so your dad might have had to make that choice. And that might've been like an either or choice for him, for what he was working with at that particular moment in that particular circumstance and time. But now you may be able to find like, all right, well, I can actually make a crap ton of money in 5 or 6 hours a day and then go be dad of the year all afternoon. I mean, even with the distance learning, they got to go to school. So I could work while they're in school and then, you know, like that sort of thing too.
We got a few more comments here I want to bring up. Facebook user says, my parents always stressed over and fought about money.
Yeah. That's common.
Yeah. Tina says, feast or famine story made me think about how my spending directly correlates to my earnings.
Yeah, Tina, high five. I had to do a lot of work on that one. Even now, sometimes I'm like, oh, I made a lot of money this month, so we should plan work retreats. Like, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah. Candace says, I was always told to go to college, get a good paying job, and save for retirement. I've definitely changed this definition for myself as I've grown up and learned more about money, investing, and life.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Wonderful. Well, Bree, this has been so great having you on. It's been very enlightening for me, and I think for a lot of the people watching and listening. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I know you're busy. We're all busy. This has really been great. For people who want to learn more about what you're doing and maybe go deeper into some of the things that you talk about, where can they find out more about you?
Sure. If they're on Facebook, they could go right over to, if they go to Sheep to Shark with Bree Sedano, that's my page. You can give that a like. There's always new content there. And then we even have a free community called Shark School. Shark School with Bree Sedano is what it's called. And there's always something cool going on in there. And then that's like where you'll hear if we're having anything that we're offering, any, you know, courses or programs. And then there's a ton of free stuff too. Candace, you're super welcome. I was happy to be here.
Yes. Candace says, thank you so much, Bree. This has been awesome. Jack, I want to put his comment here. My limiting belief, the more I earn, the more taxes I have to pay, and I have more hassle with the IRS.
Yeah. You just have to learn to love, like you're contributing, you know, like the roads you drive on paid for tax dollars. Like if your kids go to public schools, tax dollars, you just have to learn to feel good about contributing. And then you do your best to, like, obviously we object to every single thing that's legal, and you go right up to the edge of legal there where you can like peer over it, but you certainly don't cross that line. And so you play the game is really what it comes down to. Like if you kind of look at it, like it's fun. Like I love tax deductions. My nerdy little heart is like, I can deduct this. So I think learning to see it as like kind of like a game where you like, you take the deductions and then you know, and then if your business grows really big, towns will be fighting over you. You won't even have to pay property taxes. Like you want to get so good at taxes, they're saying, please come here. You don't have to pay me. Just come and give us your jobs.
Facebook user, I love you. Yes, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm glad that we can bring this to you. Bree, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, listener, for being here. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on your podcast app. And if you've already done that, share the love and tell a friend about this show. It really does help. And I need to mention one more time, if you need help with your bookkeeping, And of course you need help. You're falling behind all the time, right? Or just as bad, you get reports that you don't understand. If that's you, my team can help. Just have us do it for you and get all that off your plate. Get that load off your mind. If you want to know more about how we can help, just set up a free call with me. There's no pressure. We'll just talk. So just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books to set up a call with me. Again, that's nextlevelecommerce.co/books. Well, that's all for now. Have yourself a great week, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss out on the next story.